at this point, there are a couple things happening then, and that's happened, say, since the 78 election. The RAP people have gained control.
Right.
But then yesterday you had stewards elections, and your caucus was able to sweep that.
Well, our caucus, what
which
I'm saying,
still the unity caucus,
but the unity caucus, but not total unity caucus, the unity caucus and some of the team people who wanted to come to join want to coalition. Between the two of us, 80%.
And what do you think led to that kind of turnaround now?
I think that part of the thing that led to that turnaround is that, for one thing, you see, Bob Berkoff, you know, he wanted to run for, you know, he wanted to post Jerry Whipple, wanted to run for regional director. That's what that was his big goal, you know. He wanted to be regional director. He didn't want to just be president. He wanted to be regional director. And so he wasn't getting cooperation again from Whipple, just like Gail did in the beginning. So he's not doing a too good a job in the shop there, you see. And in fact, after he was elected, his whole delegation was elected to the convention caucus. They opposed Jerry Whipple like crazy out there, but Jerry Whipple was reelected anyway. Okay?
Now, your caucus was opposing Whipple, too.
Oh, yes. And our man didn't win either. Mm-hmm. But Whipple did get through anyway, okay? Mm-hmm. So in the meantime now, the international representative, you see, that is servicing the local here is not helping him worth a damn. Because Berkoff is still trying to cut Jerry Whipple. He's working with the people down South Southern California and Northern California and all the state. Still trying to get Jerry Whipple out. And so Whipple's not helping him at all. And Bob Berkoff doesn't have the experience or anybody to help him like Ida Gale, okay? So he's having a tough time in the plant there. And in fact, the company's putting the pressure on him now to the point where they're trying to reevaluate some of the jobs in the shop and combine like they did with the JET program, and he's not getting anywhere with a tiddly dam. He needs some international help, and they're not helping him.
Now with layoffs coming.
That's right. He's losing his support because the layoffs coming and everything else, he's losing some of his support. So anyway, the people in the shop are very unhappy. They're unhappy because they're just not doing a job, and they're not doing that good a job in arbitration or grievance hearings either. Mm. You see? They're not. And so the people are unhappy, and the young people are going out, and the older people are still there, and they're getting worried. They're getting worried. They're concerned, okay? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of them know, hey, we keep telling them that there's still a possibility of another election. And they're all for it. Now they can see that by gosh, we're going to have to, we will come out and vote. We didn't go out last time and vote, but we're going to come out this time. And then this last air scoop that came out, where Bob Berkoff was trying to explain to the membership why his wife up there, who does not belong to our local union, and who had a good job and left it and came down here, you know, why she's up there and why she's working up there, you see?
She's working in the local.
Well, she's working. See, we have an attorney that's up there that we have on a retainer, pay him so much a month. So our membership can come up there 2 days a week and get guidance and information that, you know, without any cost to them, if they have a lawsuit, then they'll take care of it, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Well, what he did, you see, these attorneys, you know, are the ones that represented him when he was charged with attacking a female security guard in the plant. When he was out campaigning this election, he was walking up the aisle and she was ahead of him, and she stopped and he fell on her, and she said that she grabbed for her it's not a gun, but something like that. And she fell down, and she says that he did it on purpose and all that sort of thing, and the company fired him. And so he got a battery of attorneys, and he promised them that if he was elected, that he'd throw the attorneys that rep in the shop up the hall out, and they could have the job there. Because, see, they make a lot of money of our local union. It helps our membership. Mm-hmm. But still, they're captured audiences up there. And so after he was elected, he did exactly that. He threw that whole group out, Dick Cantrell and whole group out. Now they've got another group in there. And so what they arranged to do, because his wife had a good job up there, you can read about the article in the paper, she left that up there, and she comes down there, and they hired her. And they never we never had anybody up there before like that, just the attorneys that come in. You know, 2 days a week. And you sign your name on a little sheet out there, and you come in order, and no big deal, okay? Now she's up there 6 days, 5 days a week. But she's trying to, what he's trying to do is have her be a spy here and there and there and there, like out in the office force there, you know, and they see us around and everything else, to find out what's going on and report back to him, because to protect him, his political interests, okay? And then also, I can keep an eye on him because he was chasing around, okay? Mm-hmm. So anyway, people in the shop are unhappy about it. They're really unhappy about it. And I, for the first time, realized that our guys weren't exaggerating too much, because since the election, I haven't been up there too much, you know? And I had no need to be up there. And I lost the election to the retiree, you know, and then I went on a trip. I was gone for a couple of months, and I come back, and I have not been up there to it. So anyway, my first taste of it was a month and a half ago, and I was getting ready to go into the, I was there for a retiree meeting. And it was after I lost the election and everything else. And, no, wait a minute here. I was there for a membership meeting. And I'd been to the 1 o'clock meeting, you know, and there's a rank and bar out there, and there was financial reports, you know, and I saw that they donated $100 to ACLU. And so I raised my hand. I said, is this as a result of executive board action? And he said, well, no. I said, well, what is the ACLU? I know what it is. They told me, I said, but didn't the executive board you? Because you don't get money unless the executive board meets that fine. No, and that made them unhappy. They don't want to be questioned by expenditures. So then I didn't say any more. And I sat down, and then they accepted the report, members accepted the report. Then I came back for the 5 o'clock meeting, because that's when all the big guns come out of the plant, you know, and I want to, you know, see everybody and talk to them, because we're keeping our caucus going, and most of our power is on first shift. Now I start to the caucus, you know, so I do. So I get there about a half hour before the meeting starts, and I'm talking to one of the girls in the office, and she was having her break, you know, and she was my girl Friday. The gal that talked to you, Ruthie, on the phone mm-hmm. so much, oh, charming girl, mm-hmm. really a doll. She's my girl Friday, and she did almost all my secretarial work. Great, great, very efficient gal. So anyway, we're having a chat with her. He says, Betty, can I see you back in the office for a minute, Bob Burkoff? I said, sure, Bob. So I went back in there, walked in the office, and who was sitting there but Ken Catton. And he said, sit down for a minute. And I said, sure. I said, how's everything going, Bob? He said, oh, pretty good. But, you know, this is something here that's been really bugging me. I said, what? He said, look. And I said, what's that? He said, it's a bill. He said, it's a bill that was left behind because when Gail Paul left office, they found out that in the recording secretary's desk was a stack of bills that had not been paid. One of them was Bob's arbitration case that our union was obligated to pay his attorney thousands of dollars, never paid. Bunch of bills that were never paid. They didn't want them to appear in the financial report until after they got out of office. And this is one of the bills that was there. I said, well, what is it? You know anything about it? And he said, well, I didn't know what it was. It took me a long time to find out what it was. It was from the A&D printers, you know. And he said, I found out that you're involved in it. And he said, I can't pay that. He says, I won't pay that. He said, that's nothing but what you put out is nothing but a political piece of paper. He said, and you're the ones going to have to pay for it. I said, what? I said, let me see that. I said, well, for God's sakes. I said, it was a notice that I sent out to the retirees, you know, as a function of my office. I'm obligated to do it. Notifying them of a general election held for the retirees. Now, if in view of the fact that there's no air scoop put out for a couple of months, there's no other vehicle I can use to get to all the membership to advise them that there is election coming up, and which offices are being held open. You can't politic and say I'm running or anything like that. I said, that's what that was. He said, yes, I got a copy of it. That's how I found out you're involved. I said, well, my God, that should have been paid last May. And he said, well, now the president knows anything about it. It's Ken Catton, see. I said, what can he? Says, well, I didn't know anything about it. I got a copy of the mail. I said, you're a damn liar. I said, I came in and talked to you. That's after I left the caucus, too, you know, the team caucus. I came in and talked to your office, and I talked to you, because I had to clear my office out. They took my phone out. They locked the door so I couldn't get back in again. Hey, when I left that caucus, boy, listen, I couldn't make a tilly damn nickel telephone call in that plant, in that hall. I knew it would happen. No, I wasn't surprised, but I went and I told Ken, I says, Ken, and I did all my work at home here, because I had no office up there then, mind you, just because I left their caucus. Zilch, okay? But they weren't going to shut me out. I wouldn't resign. No way would I resign that retirees group either. No way. So I said, now wait. I said, I came in and I told you that I was going to have to notify the membership by mail because there's no air scoop. Well, they said, he shrugged his shoulder like that. He didn't say yay or nay. And so Burkoff said to me, I said, now look, Bob, I've never taken a nickel from this local union ever that I didn't have coming to me for gas or whatever. I always submitted a voucher, always. I said, if I owed this, I would sit down and write you a check out right now. It's not the money, although it's a hell of a lot of money for me as a retiree. It's the principle of the thing. And I'll tell you one thing right now. If you're telling me that I'm responsible, I'll take you to court. I'll fight you till the very end. Wasn't long after that, I got a letter. And this happened just before I went on my vacation. Remember I told you I was going to finally go for... I haven't had any R&R for over 3 years. In fact, I've never been able to do anything like that even when I was working because... I couldn't have that much time off. And I received this letter. And this is what it said. This is dated September the 1st. Okay? Dear Sister Ammon, enclosed, let me read it. Okay, off around here. Enclosed is a copy of an invoice in the amount of $676.21 from A&B Mailing Service Incorporated for services rendered in connection with the attached piece of literature which bears your signature. The local union was forced to pay this invoice under threat of litigation and termination of the services of our regular mailing service. However, our attorneys have advised us that because of the political nature of this literature, the local union is entitled to reimbursement from you. Bastard. They'll get you, any way they can. Now, the fact that then-President Powell authorized the payment of it, does not relieve you of your liability. The fact that then-President Powell allegedly authorized payment does not relieve you of your liability. An officer of this local is not authorized to approve such unlawful expenditures. In addition, Ken Catton, president of Local 148 Retirees Chapter, disclaims having approved expenditures from this piece of literature, for this piece of literature. Therefore, at best, you and Gail Powell may be jointly liable. In any event, the local is assuredly not liable. If arrangements for repayment are not made with the financial secretary by 5 p.m. September the 11th, the local will pursue its available remedies. By copy of this letter, I'm making the same demand. Signed, Bob Burkhoff. Okay? This is on September the 1st. I received the next day, September the 3rd. I didn't even have the damn thing typed up. I wrote it up so fast. I was getting ready to leave, too. So I submitted this to Tony Gutierrez, financial secretary, who I was told to contact, and I've known him for many years, and I addressed him informally, Dear Tony. I received a letter 148-81-119 from Bob Burkhoff on 9/2/81 telling me I'm responsible for payment of the election notices mailed May 15, 1981 to all retirees. This notice was mailed out after I had discussed the chapter's obligation for such notice with President Ken Catton. He suggested I read a notice at the chapter meeting. I pointed out in order to comply with our local union bylaws and international constitution, a notice would have to be mailed because it is not possible, as in the past, to use the air scoop as a vehicle. There was not an issue published that month. He just shrugged his shoulders, which is exactly what he did. The notice was authorized by the executive board member in charge, Financial Secretary Farrell Johnson. He did. Because Gail Powell hadn't met the office in months. President Gail Powell on her return to office discussed the bill, about the bill from the A&D mailers, and instructed Farrell Johnson to pay same, which she did, once she found out that, the whole scoop. I have been with UAW since 1942. I do not understand this type of politics, and I meant that. That's really almost on the list, down to the very last one, red baiting, okay? That notice was a function of my responsibilities, recording secretary of UAW Local 148, retired workers chapter, fraternity, etc. All right, now, this notice that I mailed out, if you'll notice, it's on letterhead here, legal letterhead, okay? You see, retired workers chapter, of which I'm secretary, dated May 15, 1981. Now, we'd already had the general election, local union general election. There's to be a runoff, mm-hmm. All right, now. And then there's I'm notifying them of the retirees. See, but here it reads like this. Dear fellow retirees, as recording secretary of Local 148 Retired Workers Chapter, I would like to personally thank all retirees that took the time and effort to vote in the local union's general election. It was a record turnout. However, since most of the officers did not receive a majority vote on the first go-around, a runoff election will be conducted on Tuesday, May 26th, that will require a loyal vote once again. In addition, the May Retiree Chapter meeting will be held at 12 noon on Wednesday, May 20th, 1981. 12 noon. Remember, they opened the polls at 10:30. Bastards. At this meeting, nominations for President, Vice President, Recording Secretary, Financial Secretary, and Sergeant of Arms of our Retiree Chapter will take place. Any retired member of the chapter for 3 months or more is eligible to be a candidate for chapter office. Election of officers will take place at the June 17, 1981 chapter meeting. Thank you again for your participation in these affairs, fraternity, etc. Not a word about any caucus or a cut or wrote me again like that. And then, of course, so there's the, the...
Now, where does this now stand?
All right, now, I have not heard one word from them. nothing, you know, after nothing. But it's still hanging over the head, don't you see? Now, the thing that kind of upset me too politically, I don't know about politics, Farrell Johnson doesn't have a lot of guts, so to speak, the chairman of our caucus. So he's one of these people, these politicians, that he's trying to be very careful. He doesn't want to take too solid a position because it might offend someone. Okay, they're going to lose that one vote maybe. All right. So when I called him up after I received this, I said, Farrell, can you beat this? I said, my God. I said, here you're charging me for this. I said, now, you know, I said, this is really something. I said, I read the letter that I wrote before I mailed it to him, he'd know what it was about. And he said, and his name was used. And here he says, well, Betty, I don't remember telling Jack Foley. I don't remember authorizing that. I said, hey, I want to meet you somewhere. Let's talk this thing over. Let's talk this thing over, and I'll get a hold of Jack Foley, and he'll remind you of it, too, you know. Well, I don't remember a single thing about it, Betty. Called Jack Foley, and he says, Betty, of course I did. In fact, we waited and waited for Gail Powell to come back, because see, the president of the local is the one that authorizes expenditures, not the president of the retirees, because the president of the local paid for it out of their funds, not the retiree funds, in case you're wondering how come. I wouldn't have to ask for the president of the retiree chapter for the expenditure, although it's perfectly right that I tell the president I'm sending out a communication under my signature, because according to the Constitution, I'm supposed to do that, recording secretary, but do that. Just like the recording secretary of the union, local union, that person is supposed to notify all membership, too, of the election. And it has to be to every single member, not just the newspaper, but every single member. Okay?
So right now, this whole thing is still hanging.
Oh, back. Yes.
But it looks like there's now a real turnaround in terms of the challenge.
I'm telling you, right now, after what happened, like I say, and I wasn't sure even, you know, because I, I started getting the flu, and I wasn't able to help them too much, you know, several weeks before the election because I just couldn't possibly do it. But I did everything I could by the phone and before then to get the troops organized in the plant and keep them rah-rah-rah and, you know, and keep them going and to get the people out. And I kept thinking, oh boy, now I thought this is great. The only, you know, the turnout, I could see the turnout in the morning and at noontime. Boy, they poured out in their lunch hour like nobody. And only some only had a half hour for lunch. Now the planning people had 42 minutes, and there were a lot of women that came out and all that, you know. And we had a big turnout at lunchtime. And you know that, boy, that didn't give you much time to leave the plant and get in your car and come back and forth. So we had a good turnout. This is great, but I didn't. A lot of them were young people too, and I thought, could be another rap sweep, you know. And after all, we still haven't formed a coalition with Team. We haven't picked up all their people, you know. And, you know, they were trying to, they were trying to get a commitment, you know, from some of our people not to support me. And they succeeded, too, in a couple of them, you know. So we didn't have so I thought, oh, God, you know, I don't know, maybe we'll lose the whole thing. Who knows, you know. I mean, it's going to be really tough. But then when I heard Monday night, Farrell called me and told me that he got this letter from the International, I thought, now, and here's where the International is. I think they've been waiting all this time to wait to see who had the power in the plant. If we didn't sweep this thing, you could expect an investigation out here that just take a look at it and say, well, now, maybe that might be a borderline thing, but we'll just, you know, it's not that big a deal, or, you know, not enough to go to putting a whole election on. And after all, it's the local union has to pay for the election. Now, see, like for this election here, it cost budgeted $10,000 to hold that election, okay? But a general election, mutual bucks. And so if we'd have lost that, forget about everything. I'd have all the stuff put away, thrown out or some damn thing. Tablecloth goes back on, okay? And I get my apartment where I have a living room, you know? And I'll start the entertaining and having some R&R, and I'll really get active in local politics here out here, you know, and have a ball, see? And so, but anyway, now that that's happened, we stand a very good chance for a favorable ruling.
So you're right in the thick of things again in terms of union politics. How about other sorts of things? You seem to have been going to various conferences and... And you went to Washington for the big lobbying effort.
Oh, yes, for the big lobbying effort in Social Security.
Now, was that part of the retirees?
That's retirees' function.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. So even after the wrap, you know, one of us, as recording secretary, you know, officer, I went to a lot of conferences, a lot of things like that. Oh, yes.
So now your focus has shifted to these sorts of things through the retirees group, but still staying in there in terms of the union politics, making sure that your slate starts to get more power.
True. Because we have a, you know, I've got a, they say an enviable position where I have a lot of filing in the plant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people still there. And then I have a lot of people who were retired that have known me from many years. I used to be a shop steward, committeeman, bargaining, all that stuff for many years, too. So I've got support both places, you see, where a younger person wouldn't have that dual support.
Well, it sounds like you've got your work still cut out for you, Betty.
Well, I tell you, you know, it's just really something. When I was really sick with the flu there for a while, and honest to gosh, I was so weak that I just lie down and I even close my eyes and I hold my eyes open. That's pretty weak. And I thought, oh, wouldn't it be terrible just to do nothing, just to not have anything to go to or any causes to fight for, you know, and because I wouldn't be happy with just going to a bridge game, even though it's a challenge mentally. We know that. I'm not, you know, putting it down. But what do you accomplish, you know? There's maybe a little self-fun, all that kind of stuff, but nothing really accomplished, you know, for the working people. And I'm not saying now, if I got completely out of the labor business, what I would do, really and truly, I made up my mind to that, you know, when things look not too red hot, is that, okay, so I know physically I can't do a lot of things, but what I could do, and as long as I can live on my Social Security and my retirement pay and make it all right, you know, wouldn't have to get any supplement of any kind, and if I could volunteer for some things where I could pay for my gasoline, because gasoline is so darn expensive now. See, when I was up there as Secretary of the CAP Committee, I could turn a voucher and I'd get $20 for gasoline. So it didn't cost me. I could afford to do it. I put hours and hours and hours in, but, you know, at least it would pay for my gas, see? And so, but, you know, when you're on fixed income, you can't afford to. And my old car is so old, but it's paid for,
mm-hmm.
but it only gets 10 gallons to the 10 miles to the gallon, see? So, but what I will do is I would, like I say, with the primaries coming up, we got a lot of elections coming up next year, you know, I would go and volunteer my services with some representative and, you know, where I thought I could do some good and work with them. That's what I would do. I just couldn't just lay back and do nothing. No way.
That's clear.
Well, I wouldn't enjoy life.
Yeah.
You know, I really wouldn't. Especially when there's so many people that need help, you know, that need experienced help. And it doesn't matter anymore, you know, for instance, if you're a female. So what? If you have a desire and you want to help, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
I found that out when I was part of management.
Mm-hmm.
They finally get to the point, you know, well, they need somebody that can do the job.
That's what I was going to start to ask you with some of those questions looking back over the years. What sort of changes do you think have occurred for women over the years, both in the union and in the shop?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. After, you know, I get in there for a while, there's a lot of gals that got a chance at administrative jobs and proved that they could do it. And a lot of them, we had quite a few female women out there in on salary now. And I administrative jobs, not just salary, big difference, you know, okay? Administrative, you betcha.
And how about at the shop level? What sorts of changes do you think have happened?
For women?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't see anything, any fantastic improvements, if that's what you mean. No, because our contract is good.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we've had one of the best contracts in all of manufacturing industry in the whole United States, you know, seniority agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. We have, for years and years and years, we had it way back.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that worries me is that we're losing some of it. For instance, you know, we don't have as many leads now as we used to because when the JET program came in where they reduced the A and the B thing,
mm-hmm.
they also took the lead job description. Now, as a classification within the occupation now.
Mm-hmm.
See? We've lost that. And that's one thing we did lose that a lot of women had a crack at, which would have meant 20 cents an hour or more for them if they could have a chance at that job, for males too, as
mm-hmm.
well as women though.
See? Now tell me, in terms of things, you talked about some of those changes. What about the ability of women in the union to move up? I mean, here Gail ended up being, what you said, the second local president.
In the UAW, yeah.
And what sorts of changes have you seen in the union over the years?
All right, and in the union, we have women. You know, we have had... Well, of course, you know, at first it was just a token type of a thing to have a woman on the International Executive Board and that sort of thing, you know, and they would have you in advisory capacity and finally, you know, do the job and get you there, you know, and with more women becoming active, you know, in the local unions, and they put the pressure on the international to see to it that other women become international reps. In fact, yesterday, we had one international rep, and she's really very well qualified from our shop, Ruth Jernigan, who's international rep, and she is of Region 6. On the cap, she's the international representative for political action, sharp as a tack, you know. And she got her job through political pressure through our local union and political pressure in her region, but she's doing one hell of a good job. And she was telling me yesterday about, she was just telling one of the other guys, she said, I remember, she said, when, she said, I remember when Betty made the dissenting report, you know, at the stadium up there, you know, and she said, she was telling me how I had the prettiest hat on, all that kind of baloney, and she said, would you believe that, she said she had to walk clear across the field because they wouldn't let her park and all that kind of, reminiscing, and she's here, I was just starting in the local union, I was sitting out in the audience, but when she got up there and she made a speech, boy, she got a roaring cheer and all that sort of thing. When the president got up, she said, they just booed him and didn't cheer him very much, and she laughed, you know. She said, I was just coming up in the local union now, and she says that things have changed, so she says, you know, she says that she's got her chance because of people like me, and so she got in there, and she's very well qualified and does an excellent job.
So you see some real changes in terms of...
Oh, definitely, and very well qualified gals, too, and, you know, it's just, it pleases me no end, but they're...
Well, what about this issue of the child care, for instance?
Oh, yes.
I mean, this is truly a woman's issue.
There's a lot of men, you know, who are supporting their kids, too, who have child care problems. A lot of men.
Who are single.
Oh, yes, single. You bet.
It seems like this is, now almost 3 years since that contract. What do you think that dragging their feet on that means?
Well, for one thing, the people that are in office now, I think that they're dragging their feet because they don't know if they're going to be in office after this investigation, and they don't want to take too many really powerful positions on certain things, you know, and the international's not cooperating with them too much anyway. I checked into it again yesterday. Everybody knows this has been one of my pet babies. I want to see this thing get going out there, you know, and... Anyway, I asked again yesterday, and they said, well, Betty, wait till this thing's over, and we'll be getting into it again. I said, okay. And I said, well, what's holding it up now? What is the big issue outside of these other things I'm aware of? And they said, well, it's the liability. You know, see, the union, as far as, suppose one of the children got hurt, and who would be responsible for that, and et cetera, and the union would have a certain responsibility, and the company would have... Et cetera. And then they find a location, and what they're considering is maybe taking over, like, a child care center, buying into it and having them run it, et cetera, like that, see? And they, so they said, just be patient, Betty, okay? I said, all right, I'll be patient, but pretty, you know.
3 years is kind of long to...
Yeah, but remember, in order to get our clause in the contract for pension plans, we had to agree not to reopen that clause for 10 years in order to get it. So these things take years. That's why it breaks my heart for us to see us lose anything, because it might take us 3 years, 6 years, 9 years to get these things, you know, and each time keep getting your foot in the door and finally get it. So, you know. So we've got it now. It's just the implementation of it, okay?
Now tell me about some of the other issues that certainly affect women more than they do men, like the issue of sexual harassment. What kind of position has the union been taking on that kind of thing?
Oh, yes, sexual harassment. Well, yes, it hasn't been a real bad problem, you understand, but it's been one that was more prevalent than like during the war. Because we have a lot of young girls in there. And see, during the war, we had a lot of women middle-aged, and, you know, they weren't just young chicks in there. But see, now we have a lot of young gals in there, and they're making damn good money. In fact, we have people leaving the medical profession, things like that, because they can come in as an assembler making money. The gals, people do, you know, at the bottom of the ladder, you know. And now you see there, and unfortunately, there is a dress code. That's part of the employment agreement, you know. But the gals kind of float away from that and wear these real sexy things, cut down, and, you know, and it's rough. So the union, you know, we're still trying to protect the gals, and we'll defend them and represent them. And we have had a sexual harassment arbitration case near and won it.
And what about the issue of sexual harassment within the union itself? A lot of union women, I was at a California Federation of Labor women's conference last year, and there was a workshop on sexual harassment, and one of the things that many of the women, one was the president of one of the IAM locals, there were several women, who said the problem is not just in the shop, but in our local.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Is that openly discussed and being challenged and taken care of?
No, it's not openly discussed. Openly. And when you sexual harassment, qualified, tell me what you mean exactly.
Well, the attempts of various kinds through innuendo, actually varying degrees of physical assault, but also innuendo, putting pressure on women to grant sexual favors,